So, good morning, everyone.
We're reading in Book 10, the Book of the Double Twilight. And we've come to Canto 3, the debate of love and death. And we are still reading the long response of Savitri to all the discouraging words of death. She's told him, "Oh, death, you speak the truth, but the truth that slays, the truth that destroys, I give the truth that saves." And we've been reading this wonderful exposition of Savitri's about why the world is the way it is, the whole process of evolution. And she has still not completed her argument. She's going to continue with that. So we'll read on from line 286. We could start on this side today. Would you begin?
Turns my answers to life's questioning shocks. An epic relish, drinks of wine and grieves perversity. A curse is laid on the pure joy of life. Delight, God's sweetest sign and beauty's twin, dreaded by aspiring saint and austere sage, is shunned, a dangerous and ambiguous cheat, a specious trick of an infernal power that tends the soul to its self-hurt and fall. The Puritan god made pleasure a poisonous fruit, or red drug in the marketplace of death, and sinned the child of nature's ecstasy. Yet every creature hunts for happiness, vies with harsh pangs or tears by violence from the breast of the inanimate globe, some fragment or some broken shard of bliss.
Thank you. Why don't you help Sudha to turn the chair around? Wouldn't you like to join the circle? Chair, yes. Thati will help. Yes, please come. We just were reading on page 629. Today we have house full. We take cushions on the floor. Page 629 at the top. I've got page 629. Savitri here is speaking about the present state of the world in which the mask of death, the disguise, the misleading appearance of death has covered the Eternal's face, and the bliss that made the world has fallen asleep. She's dreaming, and in her dreams, sorrow has found her, and she's forgetting her instinct of felicity, of happiness. She's forgetting to create a world of joy. So tortured herself, and torturing by her touch, she comes to our hearts and bodies and our lives wearing a hard and cruel mask of pain. The eternal bliss, the creatrix bliss, Sri Aurobindo says that bliss is the creator of all this universe. She has fallen asleep and is dreaming these unhappy dreams. So as a result, our human nature has got twisted by this abortive birth. You know, if there's a birth which somehow goes wrong, then the child may be born deformed, twisted. So it's as if it's like that. We are in some way defective. And so we return wry answers to life's questioning shocks. All the time we are receiving impressions from the universe around us, which are challenging us, putting questions to us. And because of this distortion, our answers are also distorted, wry, twisted. We even find some delight. We find an acrid relish. Acrid is bitter, burning. Our nature finds an acrid relish in the world's pangs. There's something in us which delights in all the dramas and darknesses. We drink, our nature drinks the sharp wine of grief's perversity. Grief is a perversity of bliss, but we indulge in it. So in this way, a curse is laid on the pure joy of life, which would be our natural state if everything were as it should be. So delight, he says, is God's sweetest sign and the twin of beauty. Beauty and delight go together, but they are dreaded by the aspiring saint and the austere sage. They think that any kind of indulgence or enjoyment is dangerous. They shun it as a dangerous and ambiguous cheat, a trick, a specious trick of an infernal power, a power from the lower regions that is tempting the soul to damage itself and to fall from its divine state. Specious means misleading, deceptive. So we have this picture of a Puritan God. He's been a Puritan in many religions for many centuries. We think that God is against pleasure and that it's a poisonous fruit, that dreadful apple which has led to our fall, or a red drug in the marketplace of death. It will damage our life being, and that sin, separation from our divine self, is the child of the natural delight of nature. Yet, nevertheless, we can't help. Every creature hunts for happiness. Every creature will make sacrifices to get some little bit of bliss. Buys with harsh pangs or tears by violence from the dull breast of the inanimate globe some fragment, some little broken piece of bliss. Maybe we have some extra chairs somewhere, perhaps in the in the office there. There should be one or two more chairs. Prasad, could you look in here? These could go near the door. That'll be enough, I think. It's July. We don't usually expect so many people at this time of year.
People are coming back.
That's also true, yes. Okay, we'll go on then. Has anybody got anything to ask of that passage we just read? Red suggests the harmful vital, the lower life forces. Well, it's this curse that has twisted the natural bliss, no? The natural joy of life has got twisted and perverted and distorted and disguised when a magician puts a curse on the prince and turns him into a frog. You know, it is something like that has happened. Not Savitri, bliss.
Bliss. Okay.
The creative bliss.
And because of that?
All this has happened.
Okay.
But why is she wearing that mask? We read in these earlier lines, this has happened somehow in the course of the evolution, that God has disguised himself in these forms, unconscious forms, lower life forms. And all that is a necessary part of his plan, but it leads to this situation, which Savitri is going to show what is behind it, what is the truth behind it. But that's the reality we experience in our surface awareness at present.
Talking about the twist, Mother said her mother also had a twist in her nature. I was wondering, what is that twist would be?
No, it was when she identified herself with the earth nature, she experienced this twist. Yeah, that is being talked about here. Yeah.
I always find the reference to Puritan specifically relevant to the United States.
Oh, not only.
I think it's much broader, but it is very specific to the United States.
So what would you like to say?
Yes. That because of that, that Puritan image of God, which is very harsh and rule-bound and negating of the pleasures and the joy of life, that's how you end up with having that red drug be so tilting.
So exciting.
So exciting.
And attractive. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Please remember the Puritans came from England.
And there's Puritanism in all religions. No?
Yeah.
If we look now at Islam, what a strong Puritan tendency is there at the moment. No, it has not always been so dominant, but it is very strong at the moment. Even in the Oriental religions, it is there.
The idea of punishing the flesh for the spirit
rise. Mortifying the flesh.
Yeah, mortifying.
Yes. So there's really something perverse in that, from our point of view.
Yeah. It's the fear of the joy.
And yet we can't help hunting for happiness in one way or another. Yes. You would read Chitra, please. Even joy.
Mm.
Yes. I think these lines are quite clear. Anybody would like to ask anything? The last line, we'll talk about that, yes. Just wait a moment.
This ignorant power.
Yes.
It's God.
He says, she makes a contrast. She says, although God made the world for his delight, an ignorant power took charge and seemed his will. And death's deep falsity has mastered life. So some falsehood has come. When we are reading The Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo discusses how could all this have happened, what has happened. And he points out that this falsity is not perceptible even really in the animal kingdom normally. It is something that belongs to the emergence of mind. So I think here the ignorant power is the unenlightened mind, ignorance. And that is what Savitri is battling. She has come to battle the grip of ignorance and death. And this is why, because this perversion has come about because of that.
So we look through history again and again, ignorance has caused terrible perversion. Swearing is
Lines 305 and 306.
Yes.
I think needs a little explanation.
These need a little explanation.
All means are held to catch a single beam. What is a single beam? And eternity sacrificed for our final sins.
Yes. So this is from the point of view of the Puritan. No, where joy itself is considered something poisonous, something that will pollute and damage you. No? And the hunger for bliss in that case is really seen as some kind of terrible hook that catches hold of you and puts you into a very bad fate. No? And this is because since we have all this hunger for joy, we'll do anything just for a little bit of it, a single beam of it. And even when you think that by indulging and following joy, you're sacrificing your eternal soul, you can't help doing it. I don't think it's really like that, but that's how we perceive it, it is perceived.
Yeah, but most of the human beings feel that if there's a joy, it's accompanied by a sadness.
Yes.
You're always fearful of
or a punishment even.
Yes. Yeah.
And even an eternal punishment, if you're a real Puritan, you believe
even
that...
Even if it's not sinful, your reason of joy, still you feel something, now the other...
Be careful, is, be careful. Yes, well, there is something like that in our the present balance of forces. No? So you asked about this last line. When this ignorant power came in, and this illusion, this deep falsity of death has become an essential part of life, everything in the universe became a play of chance, of random happenings, which seem to be inevitable. What is fate is what is fixed and destined and can't be changed. So here Savitri is hinting that there's something else. Actually, all these things, this play of chance, is only imitating fate. It is not the only force which is at work. This week I happened to be looking at a line in another part of the poem in which it says that what looks like fate is an outcome of the play of chance and the pressure of an ordering will. The ordering will of the divine for continual greater perfection and fulfillment. So these are like two forces that are working together. So it only seems to be that everything in our world is random. There's a play between what seems to be random and what has been ordained. I don't know whether that answers your question.
It's confusing sometimes to understand if she's explaining something that's thought but not really true, or she's
yes.
saying what she means. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So now in the next passage, she's going to tell us the truth that saves.
You
can. Yes.
On page 57.
57, that's rather far away. Oh, yes.
The line means what seems to be, because both are an illusion.
What is the line on?
I don't have the line number.
421.
From the bottom. And it's talking about the potencies of the spirit.
Yes, watching the box.
Yes, those divinities, pure spiritual powers, are at peace, watching the trouble beneath the stars. They are immortal, and they are watching what's going on here, this play of death and chance. So what are you asking?
Well, the question is about the word chance, and I've thought about it this week so much, the two together, and the only thing I could come up with for myself is that both really are an illusion, are not somehow real, but I don't think I'm right.
But they are both factors which dominate our human life.
Why?
Well, it is like that. We know that we are going to die, that everything around us is dying.
Yes.
No? That death is a fact of the flow of life in the material world. Mm-hmm. And chance is very powerful for us because we never know what's coming next. Mm-hmm. We can plot and plan and work things out and organize. Something unexpected will always come up.
From our point of view, it's chance.
Yes. We experience it as chance.
I don't know, I wrote down, I think, what you said, because of our consciousness. Or put it that play of chance.
Louder.
That's how it seems to.
Unconsciousness,
yes. That's how it seems to us, because we are not aware of what is behind.
There is a famous book by a French biologist called.
Doesn't matter what it's called. What does it say?
Necessity and chance.
Yes.
Chance and necessity.
Giacomo.
Yeah. There, the whole concept is that there is a necessity, biological, physical necessity, but there's no place for any other necessity. There's no place for any spiritual forces working in there.
Mm.
And the denial of all these forces, that's at the very heart of it. And yet, there are these talk of the unexpected universe. We don't know how the universe is happening. Many times.
So Sri Aurobindo also speaks about the between necessity, what is fixed and ordained. I think it comes from the Greeks, actually, this antinomy, this contrast. They already observed this. They had a goddess necessity, Ananke, who couldn't be avoided, the inevitable. Okay. We've got a beautiful passage coming. Shall we move on to that? Alice, would you read? Yes.
May I just offer something that's, I think, will fit in very well to our communication, and that is, I waited for almost 8 months for a visa to come back to my beloved Sri Aurobindo a very long ago. And I had just decided, well, whatever happens, whether it's real or not, I will decide, I will choose happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was prepared to stay in the United States. On the surface of things, to stay in the U.S. and never be able to come back to India, because 2 years I couldn't get the visa I needed. And as soon as I let that go and made the conscious decision to be happy, in spite of all this, and I was able to come back. So my offer.
Thank you.
I don't know what it means, and I don't care, but I'm just glad to be back.
Nice to have you with us, Alice. Yes, please read.
A secret air of pure felicity, deep like a sapphire heaven, our spirits breathe. Our hearts and bodies feel its obscure call. Our senses grope for it and touch and lose. If this withdrew, the world would sink in the void. If this were not, nothing could move or live. A hidden bliss is at the root of things. A mute delight regards time's countless works to house God's joy in things. Space gave wide room to house God's joy in self. Our souls were warm.
Thank you. Oh, this is the keynote of the next description, explanation that Savitri is going to give. Our spirits breathe a secret air, a different atmosphere than this physical air, an air of pure felicity. Felicity, bliss, happiness. That he describes it so beautifully. He says that air is deep, like a sapphire heaven, an intense blue sky. That's what our spirits are breathing. And our hearts and our bodies feel the gall of that air of pure felicity. And that's what our senses are after. Our senses grope for it, and they sometimes touch it, and then they lose it. Hmm? Yes, Don?
Air is also a lovely melody.
And air can also be a beautiful melody, that's true. But here, when he says breathe it, then we think it means this atmosphere. Yeah? If it weren't for this supporting atmosphere, the world would just dissolve, sink into the emptiness. If it weren't for this supporting atmosphere of pure bliss, nothing could move or live. A hidden bliss is at the root of things. Yes, Narendra?
If people, the universe will still move. This bliss is not there. The gravitational force and laws of nature will still work. So I don't understand.
No, gravitation is nothing but an expression of this bliss.
Yeah.
Nothing could live or move. This is not our human bliss.
No.
This is God's bliss.
Yeah.
And if he were not having that bliss, if he were not delighting in all the movements of the universe, including gravity, and gravity is like love. It's the most material form of love. It's the power of attraction.
This was separate from self.
So all this is bliss, no? This silent delight, mute delight of the divine is watching everything that happens in time. And all these objects and appearances in the material universe have appeared to house, to give forms for God's joy in things, in variety, in multiplicity, no? And to house God's joy in self, in consciousness, centered consciousness. Our souls were born. Our souls, the soul of each and one, every one of us, is meant and does house God's delight in being, in simply existing. The ancient rishis perceived that if there's pure existence, there must also be at the same time total consciousness, total power, and total bliss. These things are inseparable. The soul in us was born to house that consciousness of total bliss. That's why we are here. So now she will elaborate on this. Young lady at the back, would you like to read? Oh, sorry, it's Manasa. Sorry. Please read. Yeah.
This universe
come line to some deep service yesterday. The All Wonderful has had heaven with his beams. He has made blind ancient space his marble house. He spilled his spirit into matter's silence. His fires of grandeur burn in the great sun. He glides through heaven, shimmering in the moon. He is beauty caroling in the fields of sun. He chants the stanzas of the odes of wind. He is silence, watching the stars at night. He wakes at dawn and calls from every door. Lies stunned in the storm and dreams in flower and tree. Even in this labor and odor of ignorance, on the hard, perilous ground of difficult earth, in spite of death and evil circumstances, the will to live persists, the joy to be.
Thank you. These are lines that we can read over and over again and relish the beauty and delight that they contain, and they can help us to be more conscious of the divine presence in the appearances of the world around us. One of my neighbors complains of being woken up too early in the morning by the roosters and the peacocks, no? But he doesn't know that it's God waking up at dawn and calling from every bough, no? So even in the world that it is, this world of toil, hard effort, and sorrow that we live in because of our ignorance, here on this hard, perilous, dangerous ground of difficult earth, in spite of the prevalence of death and all the evil circumstances, still we experience this will to live. And that's simply a joy to be, a delight in existence. That's what keeps us going through all the difficulties of life.
Some do not keep the will to live.
That's right. So Sri Aurobindo speaks about this also. She's saying that some individuals don't keep that will to live. They commit suicide, no? They just can't stand it at all. He says, this is also, it's a longing for some better state that makes them do that. Also for a longing, they dream either that they could be at peace or that they could be in a better state. It's very unfortunate that they do that, because usually, unless there's a special grace, I think they land themselves up in a worse state. But that's what he says about this. It's like the contrary, the opposite of it. This life is not good enough. I want to be in another state. I want to enjoy the delight of another state. This point of the ignorance that led to her suffering, yes.
I think that's an important knowledge, that we don't solve the problem.
Well, I think I've read lately so much about prisons and people who have a will to live.
Yes.
Some just give up.
And some give up, yes. It's also the same in any difficult circumstance. I was hearing about a description of prisoners of war, prisoners of war when the Japanese occupied Southeast Asia. And it was clear that some of them just gave up. They didn't commit suicide, but they didn't hold on to that will to live. But this is perhaps allowed. It's the soul's choice. No? Suicide may not be in tune with the soul's choice. We don't know. Yes, Lorraine.
The word comes up as a thin red line in I've done some nursing in the past.
Can't hear you.
I've done some nursing in the past.
Yes.
And there's a thin line about when someone's dying, the process of dying, or they're not, and they are soon to go into the hospice, or they're lucky enough. And they're in agony.
Yes.
And it's, there's a real thing, the medications they can get, the lives that are there. I just don't know the answer.
Yes.
We're sitting here.
It's easy for us to say. Yes.
Such debates are now going all over the world about physician-assisted deaths. Mm-hmm. People who are in such agony that they feel life is
But I also remember a wonderful account that was shared with me once by a person who had been in exactly that position. He was in a hospice, dying of cancer, and in fact he did actually die. And then he had such a wonderful experience. He rose up out of his body, corresponds exactly with what Sri Aurobindo writes here, and he saw the earth, he saw how every soul on earth is a heroic soul who has accepted to be here for a purpose. And he was given the choice, would you like to go back? And he came back and his body was cured. He didn't have cancer anymore.
Is it Anita Morjani that you're talking about?
Yeah. I don't know the name of the person.
It's an Indian lady.
No, this was not a lady. This was a man in the States, in the US. Yes. No, and closer friends. I had a friend who was being operated on for his liver, and he told me, I was clearly given the choice, he said. No? I think Jung also speaks about it, that the soul is given the choice. If you're identified with your soul, then you come back with a different perspective on things.
In the similar case, Anita Murjani talks about unconditional love, with which she decided to come back.
She experienced unconditional love for the earth, and that's what made her come back. So shall we go on with these wonderful lines? I will see if I can send it to you. I have. What are you talking about, Don? What do you want to have?
Just what you said.
Yes, you have received this. In fact, I received it from you. You sent me this account of this life after death experience, and you asked me whether I thought it could be authentic or not. And I wrote back to you and I said, to me it seems to correspond exactly with what Sri Aurobindo, but it's already maybe 3 years ago or more.
So much like this, because it's not about so much the it's like he's talking from an evolutionary point of view, like in this book, in this poem. And I highly recommend it. I just recently found out about it and read it. Proof of Heaven by Dr. Evan Alexander. He's a neurosurgeon. He felt it. He wouldn't allow himself, he wouldn't surrender to his understanding of seeing other near-death experiences and knowing what was going on. But he was afraid to surrender to that and say, yes, I have experienced this, I understand it. But then, of course, after 7 days in a coma, he came back and he's written this incredible book that I think is very much related to what we've been talking about this morning.
Thank you.
So we'll just take one more question from Patty, and then we'll move on. Patty.
I just want to say something about the idea of doctor-assisted deaths, because some people think that's compassion. But Mother has written on to know how to suffer. Mm-hmm. And I've had this experience in a small way, had a couple teeth come out without anesthetic. And I mean, that hurts. But just that amount of suffering, I could see how I grew through that. It strengthened me, it made me think, look what you endured. So the idea that another person has the right to supposedly alleviate somebody's suffering, it's really none of their business.
No, it's when people ask, some people choose.
But it's not their soul asking. Yeah, well, the soul has decided you're going to
go. We can't tell. We don't know.
Yes, they think they're so arrogant, they think they can judge about life's health.
It's compassionate. It's separating that humans are strong.
So let's go on. Line 140. Would you read, sir? Sorry, 340. Thank you. Anything to ask? Anything to share? Prasad.
In the previous line we read that the beauty and delight are twin sisters, and delight is the state of divine, and maybe joy is what given to us. You know, delight is too high for us. But Mother made an observation that in Japan she missed the joy, whereas she felt that in India. At the same time, my observation is, I saw the beauty.
Yes, that's what she also saw.
Yeah.
She said, unbelievable beauty. Things that she had thought were only visions, she saw in material reality in Japan.
Yeah.
I don't remember her saying about missing the joy, but
yeah, she said joy.
If you can show me the reference, I will be interested, because certainly she enjoyed, she delighted in that beauty that she experienced in Japan.
I don't know, I remember very clearly.
You find it and show to me, I'll be very...
Here she felt joy, but the missing thing is in Japan is joy. So I was wondering, the missing thing in India, for example, I cycled around Japanese villages, it's so beautiful. Whereas I walk around in our villages, it is not so beautiful.
40 years ago, there were some beautiful villages. I remember thinking that one day Eddie and Chavadi is going to be the most beautiful village in the world. But it has been spoiled since then. That lovely area around the tank where there was a, near the temple. Anyway, let's not go into that.
Yeah, my question is, why not God, joy and beauty can coexist? It looks like they are.
They should. They should. They do.
They
should. They must. Yes, Don.
There is the line 356. It grows towards the Titan and the God.
Yeah, that's good. Interesting.
Something evil, and God is the epitome of goodness.
Yes, and what is it?
Other.
Look at this sentence and tell me, please, what is it? It's the joy. It's the joy. So that joy is a nourishing experience. It nourishes the soul and the life and the body also, you know. And it helps the being to grow. It helps the being to grow in two ways. The sun of beauty and the sun of power help the joy to grow. If it's the sun of power, it may help the being to grow towards being a titan, a superhuman, ego-centered being. And if it's the sun of beauty, it may help the soul to grow, to discover its inner divinity.
This joy is Satchitananda Ananda.
This is Ananda, yes. Yes, Patty. Patty.
There are several lines here that reinforce what I said earlier.
Yes, it described your experience exactly, no?
There's the joy in all of these, the sense joy dares to grow upon forbidden soil, it's saffron, Krishna, and flowers of pain. I want to say again that this whole use of pain relievers in allopathic medicine is really bad, in my view, because it throws people into the unconscious. My mother had a little severe back pain in her 90s, and when I talked to her on the telephone, she told me she was on these pain relievers. I felt like I was talking to a robot, you know. It affects the consciousness, it affects the brains.
Anyway, we accept what you say, Patty, but let's go on.
Yes. Well, if I can stick my nose in just one other. I've been listening to these videos of Dr. Caroline Leaf, L-E-A-F. She's a neurophysiologist or whatever from South Africa. For 25, 30 years she's been teaching. She's Christian, but she's been teaching about the awakening the forebrain, you see, and how to do that. And so this, she said that prayer is the greatest thing that a person can do with their thought. So whether prayer, meditation, singing, whatever. But the point is that this pain, I mean, so much music, for example, has come out of pain in the United States. And so this thing about pain, they shouldn't try to rub it off and annihilate it with.
We shouldn't try to solve it with unconsciousness.
Yeah, right.
I think exactly. That mother says the thing to do if you're in intense pain is to try to go to the very, very, very center and origin of that pain, and there you can find the bliss. But it's not easy. I remember Sri Aurobindo has said that after he had his terrible accident to his thigh, it was so painful, it said it took him 3 days to turn it into Ananda. So.
What is this notion of joy in sin?
Of what?
This line here, joy in sin.
Yeah. There's a joy in being virtuous, but people also have a lot of fun being sinful. But what he's saying here, I think, is that that delight, that original bliss, it takes so many disguises. He's written about it in terms of he says, as an analogy, the rasas, the aesthetic rasas, we can enjoy with our aesthetic sense all kinds of things, even horror, terror, sin, and all the rest of it. So the soul also can take a delight, a pure delight, pure felicity, in all those different tastes of experience. I think that's what he means.
It's not a vital delight.
No, it's the soul delight.
So where is the ignorance in this?
Ignorance is not in this. He's talking about bliss here.
It's not at all in it.
In this passage that we are reading, there he spoke about the ignorance. I think if we can just go a little further, you will see how this bliss, which takes so many forms for the soul, how does it work here on earth in our material consciousness? I think that's what's coming next. Srinivasmurti, would you read? Can you speak louder? We are many people and the road is noisy.
On earth, it lingers, drinking its deep fill through the symbol of the pleasure and her pain, of the grapes of heaven and the flowers of the abyss, of the flame stabs and the torment craft of hell, and dim fragments of the glory of paradise, the small, paltry pleasures of man's life. In his petty passions and joys, it finds a taste in tears and torture of broken hearts, in the crown of gold and the crown of thorns, in life's nectar of sweetness and its bitter wine. All being it explores for unknown bliss, sounds all experience for things new and strange. Life brings into the earthly creature's days a tongue of glory from a higher sphere. It deepens in this musings and his heart, in his high resolves and noble deeds, waters in his errors, dares the abyss spring. It climbs in his climbings, wallows in his fall. Angel and demon lights his chamber share, possessors or competitors for life's heart.
Thank you. So this is still the delight of the soul, which enjoys being on earth, drinking its fill, drinking in all the different kinds of delight it can experience in this material world and in this human life. Contrasting kinds of enjoyment, the grapes of heaven and the flowers of the abyss, of the dark parts of lower nature. Even the flame stabs and the torment craft of hell, really perverted, terrible kinds of delight, and dim fragments of the glory of paradise. It's exploring all being, all existence, for unknown bliss, things it has not tasted before. And it is sounding, it's trying to go right into the depths of all experience for new and strange kinds of enjoyment. So that possibility is there in our life, and it can come to us in our musings, get expressed in art. It enjoys some perfect word, this special delight of reading Savitri. It exults in the high resolves and noble deeds of the earthly creature when those happen. But it also is there in his errors and ready to go right to the very edge of the pit. No? It climbs in his climbings, wallows in his fall. It's surprising how often Shri Aurobindo uses this word wallows in the poem. And wallows is precisely that wallowing is the delight of rolling in the mud. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. It's the hippopotamus's love song. Patty.
This passage gives me an insight into Mother's story, the path of later on, that they showed last night, an illustrated version in a video for 15 minutes before we had our other film in the ashram. So I was asking Mother, I said, there's more to mind, I need to understand more about this. Are all of you familiar with this story?
Patty, we have just 5 minutes more.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, the boy is going down a path which is beautiful with all the pleasures of the moment, and he wants to keep continuing, but his inner voice and voices around him are keep saying, no, this path is dangerous. You come with us to the beautiful and the true. But he says, no, later on, tomorrow, he keeps saying. So he keeps going, and then everything
gets darker and darker, mm-hmm. until it's too late.
So now I see that in the light of this, it seems inevitable that people go through that, because until they have seen or tasted this misery, they're not ready for the ultimate thing. Because finally he wakes up, I mean, he falls from his bed, it is a nightmare that he's having. And when he wakes up, he says, now I won't put off my work until the next day. Because he had this nightmare because he went to sleep instead of doing his homework. Mother wrote that story in 1893. She was, 15 years of age?
I think we will pause there. Savitri's explanation continues for several pages more, and we can listen to Mother's voice reading some passages from here. We have heard these passages before, no?
But Savitri answered to Almighty this, I have triumphed over thee within. Death, not for my heart's sweet poignancy, nor for my happy body's bliss alone, I have fled from thee, the living succubus. But for his work and mine, our sacred charge, our lives are God's messengers beneath the stars, to dwell under this shadow, they have come, tempting God's light to earth, but he is no choice. But to the woman, death, the God of life. O human face, put off mind's painted mask, the animal meat, the worm that nature made. Accept thy future and birth, thy narrow life. But Savitri replied to mighty death, my heart is wiser than the reason's thought. my heart is stronger than thy bond of old debts. It sees and feels the one heart beats in all. It feels the high transcendent sunlight hand. Death bound his sovereign head in cold descent. I give to thee, saved from death and pregnant fate, whatever once the living Satyavandana in his heart. His solitude. Return, O child, to thy forsaken earth. But solitary replied, thy gifts resist. Earth cannot flower if lonely I return. Then, this once more sent forth his angry cry. What must thou, a verse sweet and changing light? Who thinks that one man did all thy mercy? The solitary replied, give me back Satyavan, my only Lord. Thy thoughts are vacant to my soul that feels the deep eternal truth in transient things. Thus, with armed speech, the great opponent told.
Thanks to Shobindor.